Okay, good evening, everyone. Welcome, Zadie. Welcome, Andrew. Welcome, Erwin, Melissa, and all those who will be logging on with us shortly. Or who knows, maybe I'll be surprised if someone will join me in person here. I need to figure out a system. It's on me. I know technically it's not Yichud because the shul is open to members to come at any point, but I don't like the idea of myself being here if, like, just like one woman or someone shows up, even though we're on Zoom. We need to figure out a system for me to know whether people will show up or not, or whether I should be in the shul. But that's something to put on the side. If any of you have ideas of a good system for me to figure, maybe it just means a weekly email. I just don't want to spam you guys, but I'll figure it out. Okay, so we are in Chav Dalet Amud Aleph. We are in 24a. This is a long one. But as the general principle goes, generally, like you're learning a Tosfos, you're learning a Gemara, generally the longer pages are easier than the shorter ones. Why? Because the fact that there's more Gemara is because there was less commentary on the Gemara. Why is there less commentary on the Gemara? Probably because the Gemara is not so complicated and didn't necessitate. Look at this. There's literally no Tosfos. The Bali Tosos literally have nothing on this entire doc. Well, Ahmed, at least, let's say that much. What's the other? So what do we have on the other side? Oh, we do have something right at the end. Okay, entire Ahmed, I stand corrected. So this is going to be a little bit, so usually when it's longer, it means actually the content is easier. There are exceptions to the rule, but this is not one of the exceptions. So this is all a Agadata toward the end. Nothing of a purely halachic nature here. So what the majority of this Gemara is going to be is essentially, we just learned that there were 613 mitzvos in the Torah. Hopefully that's something we learned at some point in our education. And what's going to happen is David HaMelech, Yeshayahu HaNavi, others who come after him, they're basically looking at their current generation. And basically this supports the idea of Yiridas Hadoros, of the degradation of the generations, that with each ensuing generation we get further from our Sinai and we are less than those who came before us. That's actually what's happening here in the Gemara, because what David HaMelech is about to do, we're three lines from the top, Ba David Vamidana Achas Yisrael. Even though there are 613 mitzvahs in the Torah, came along David HaMelech, and David HaMelech whittled it down to 11 commandments. Now, of course, it doesn't mean that David HaMelech was a reform rabbi, and he's like, we'll get rid of the mitzvahs we don't like, and we'll only keep the mitzvahs sort of that we do like, and we're only going to keep 11 out of 613. What it means is that David HaMelech chose to emphasize 11 principles. You'll see these aren't, not all of them necessarily fall into strict halachic mitzvos, but we're going to talk about things that are more general midos as well. And this is what David decided was best for his generation to emphasize. Now, where does David emphasize 11 qualities that a person should have? D'chsiv, as he writes in his book in Tehillim, which this is Kapitel Tesvav, this is number 15, Psalm 15. Mizmor LeDavid, Hashem, mi yagor ba'ohalecha, mi yishkon b'har kodeshecha. Who will live on in your tents, and who will dwell on your mountain? So basically, we're describing somebody who is dedicated to God. Poich tamim upoel tzedek, someone who walks in completeness, and his acts are just. Bedover elmes belvavo, and speaks truth in his heart. He doesn't speak ill of others, doesn't slander. Well, Asa l'Re'ehu, Ra, so he doesn't do evil unto others. V'cherpa lo nasa al krovo, he doesn't allow humiliation to come upon those who are close to him, his relatives. Nivza be'enav nimas. Those who are despicable are likewise in his eyes. Vesirei Hashem yichabed, those who fear God, he honors. Nishba laharav lo yamir. And if he takes an oath that's to his detriment, he will not seek to revoke it. Kaspo lo nasan ben neshech. He does not give his money to earn ribis, to earn interest off of it. V'shochad al naki lo lakach. And he does not take a bribe from those who are clean, those who are pure. Osa ela, anyone who does these, lo yimot lo lam, they shall never falter. Those are the 11 principles. Now, some of these very obviously require elucidation because, wait a minute, you're telling me that you're such a pious person for not taking a bribe? I'm pretty sure that's a baseline expectation of the Torah for any individual in a position of judgment, position of power. You're not supposed to be taking bribes. So why is this considered extra credit? Why is this the icing on the cake? So here we go. Holich Tamim. We're going to break down each and every one of these 11. Number one, Holich Tamim, Ze Avram. This refers to Avram Avinu, to Siv. Hisalech Lefanai Ve'yesamim. Shall walk before me and be complete. Number two, Poel Tzedek. What does it mean to work justly? Kagon Abba Chilkiyahu. Now, who? Great. Like Abba Chilkiyahu, Shkoyach. Anyone know who Abba Chilkiyahu was? So, Abba Chilkiyahu,
it's a Honi
end of time. Sorry?
Grandson of Honi Hameyago.
Oh, well, that's very good. Who is this? Is that Arthur? I can't. You just spoke.
That's me. I'm just reading.
It's me. Yeah. Oh, Andrew. Now, your voice sounds like Arthur.
That's a compliment.
Maybe it's still on the recording. Okay, very good. Now, the story that we have in mind here is from the Gemara Maseches Tainus, on Chaf Gimel Amid Aleph, I believe, which a bunch of rabbis want to insult him, right? I think you're right. I think it's after the Choni Hamagel's story, and they wanted him to help them out as well, if memory serves. So these rabbis approach him while he's working in the field. He's working, I think, as a sharecropper for somebody else, or he's on the clock. So he doesn't even respond to the people who come to him, who give him greetings, because lest he take time that he's being paid for and use it for his own needs. So he was so scrupulous about other people's money. So that's what it means. Someone who, his deeds, when he works justly. That's Abba Chilkiyahu. Number three, V'dover Emes Bolvavo, K'um Rav Safra. So who was Rav Safra? You take a look in the Rivan toward the end. So the Rivan tells us a story from about Rav Safra. Rav Safra was in the middle of davening, he's middle of Kriya Shema. And as we very well know, Kriya Shema, one's not allowed to talk, not just because of decorum, but one's not allowed to make a hefsek, an interruption in the middle of Shema, except for very extenuating circumstances. An individual came over to sell to buy something from Rav Safra. And he assumed the fact that Rav Safra did not reply to him, he was ignoring him, was because he wasn't interested in the low price that he was being offered for that particular item. So what happened? The guy kept saying, oh, okay, I see you're ignoring me. I'll give you 500. Oh, I'll give you 600, 700. You know, by the time he was done with Kriyashma, he had a lot of kavana. It went from $500 to $2,000. Afterwards, Rav Safra says to the guy, look, when I heard you give me the offer for 500 originally, I was okay with that. I'm not going to make you lose out because I was davening Shema, so I'm going to sell to you for 500. That's considered a very high level of integrity, and that's why we refer to Rav Safra when we talk about what's maybe Dover Emes Bolvavo, speaking truth that comes from your heart. That's number three. Now number four. Lo Raga Alishono. So who do we think is somebody who doesn't speak ill, somebody who doesn't slander, someone who doesn't lie? Ironically, Ze Yaakov Avinu, it's the first of Yaakov Avinu, to Siv, as written, Ulai Musheni Aviv Yisbe Eim Kemisatea. Maybe my father, when he feels me, he'll realize that I'm Yaakov and not Esau, and I'll become this fool who tried to, this guy who tried to fool him in his eyes. So this is funny. Why is Yaakov taken as the paradigm for speech? If anything, Yaakov lied his way to the bracha. Now, maybe it was permissible, maybe it was justified, but certainly as a paradigm, we see Titin Emes Yaakov. that we associate Yaakov with truth with Emes, that's very difficult to understand. Any ideas?
He was obeying his mother.
Okay, well, if my mother tells me to light a fire on Shabbos, I'm not allowed to listen to her. So
maybe he was expert at this issue, so he was a good guy to follow. He knew exactly what would be at risk if you break it.
Okay, but still, like, to associate the idea of Emes with Yaakov, it's difficult. So I'll tell you, the Maritz Pius, he says, actually, there's a reason that we quoted this pasuk in particular to, you know, because you don't really see anything in this pasuk that talks about truth-telling. But if you look at the formulation, it says, Ulai Yimusheni Avi. Now, the proper formulation, if Yaakov was afraid lest Yitzchak come to feel him and realize that he's not Esav, it should say, Pen Yimusheni Avi. Pen is usually lest something happen. Ulai is, think about like in Slichos, when we say, Ulai Echos Amani Vavyod, Ulai Rachay, maybe God will have mercy upon us. It's a hopeful maybe. I am hoping that perhaps this will, it's a perhaps. Perhaps this will happen. So actually, Yaakov, even though he was lying, deep down, he was hoping, Ulai Musheni Avi, perhaps my father might feel me, he'll recognize the ruse, and I won't have to be a deceiver. So, and that's why Yaakov is the truth teller. Even when he had to do, even was necessary, Yaakov Avinu still didn't want to do it. He was very reluctant. Okay. Now, number five. Lo asal rehu ra. Someone doesn't do evil to his friend. Well, what does that mean specifically? Sholo yara l'umas chaver. Someone who doesn't go into his friend's trade. This is the idea of a sagas bull, that if my friend has an apple stand and he makes his living off it, and I set up a rival apple stand right near him and I deprive him of his livelihood, that's called being yara l'umas chaver. The cherpa lo nasa al krovo. Now, what's it mean? Someone doesn't allow cherpa, to allow humiliation come upon his krovim, his relatives, or those who are close to him. Zeh makariv es krovo. This is someone who brings his krovim closer. Rivan says lo saval cherpas krovo. He doesn't allow humiliation to come upon those who he's close with. Perhaps he brings them closer to the right path. What does that mean? This is someone who despises those who despise God. And so Chizkiyahu HaMelech took his father, who was a great sinner, a great idolater, and when he was being buried, he didn't bury him with the proper honors. He put him on this, literally, a bed of ropes. I'm not really sure what that looks like, per se. But it was a degrading way to carry him in the funeral ceremony. Whereas, number eight, Vezgir Hashem Yechabed, one is supposed to respect and honor those who are God-fearing. Zeh Yoshafat Melech Yehuda. This refers to Yoshafat, the king of Yehuda. Shevet Shah Shaya Roa Talmud Chacham, anytime he saw a Torah scholar, he would get up from his chair and he would embrace him and he would kiss him. And he would say, he would call him, Avi Avi, my father, Rabbi Rabbi, Mari Mari, my Rabbi, my master. And he had such respect for Torah scholars. Number nine, Nishba Laharav Luyamir, someone who swears, takes an oath to his detriment, but does not seek to annul it. This is a reference also, I believe, to a story in Maseches Tainis, where what happened was, Rav Yochanan, I think he was at the house of a politician, of Nasi there, and he didn't really trust their kashrus. But so what did he say? He said, oh, I'm fasting today, that's why I'm not eating any of your food. And the halacha is that one can't take on a fast just part of the day. You have to take on a fast for the entire day for it to be chal. So technically, the fast that he claimed to have accepted upon himself would not be binding on the halacha. But nonetheless, since he said that he committed to it, he kept to it anyway. So even though he technically took an oath to his detriment, so to speak, nonetheless, he did not revoke it. Well, not that, didn't need revocation. Didn't need to, but he did it nonetheless. Kasbul Anasim Anasha, what does it mean? Someone who doesn't lend money on interest. I thought not supposed to lend money on interest to anyone. Well, to Jews, but to non-Jews, technically one's allowed to lend on interest. So, and comes along the pasuk to tell us, Afila Baribis Omikochavim. Even when I'm dealing with non-Jews, if I don't charge them ribis, that is seen as something that is laudable. We'll come back to that in literally one moment. The Shochad al Nakiu Lakach. And what does it mean? Shochad. What does it mean? The person who doesn't take Shochad from one who is Naki could go on Rabbi Shmuel Bar Rav Yossi. It's like the story of Rabbi Shmuel Bar Rav Yossi. I don't know how the Gemara assumes we know all these stories. So you look in the Rivan again, the Rivan toward the bottom of the right column. You go to Rabbi Shmuel Bar Rav Yossi. Shai Ariso, maybe lo Mishalo, Kodem Zimano. Lo Ratza Likach de Lioslo Dayan. Usually, when one gives me a bribe, they're giving me money that they own and they're transferring it to me. I now have more money in my bank account than I had previously. That's usually how bribes work. The case here was that Rabbi Yishmael Bar Rav Yossi's sharecropper, who works for him on his field, gave him the food that he already owns. Just he brought it to him a little earlier than usual. And even though technically it's not shochad, it's technically not a bribe, because that is my food already. He's not giving me anything I don't already own. And the fact that he brought it to me a little earlier maybe is some form of shochad. At least the extent that Rav Yossi Bar, Shmuel Bar Rav Yossi was concerned for it. And that's what it means, someone who doesn't take shochad, not real shochad, but something that comes close to it. And again, this is a matter, all these things, for the most part, reflect someone who has very high integrity. That was something that David HaMelech emphasized. And I just want to go back a moment to number 10, where we talked about ribis, not lending on interest, even to a non-Jew, that's considered laudable. Now, when I first read that, the way I interpreted it, I'm sure maybe somebody else interprets it this way, is that there is an intrinsic value to not lending interest on interest to a guy. However, if you look in the Rivan, he writes, why is it laudable? Why is it so special if I don't lend on interest to a non-Jew? Because lest I get used to lending on interest, and then I might lend to an actual Jew. I might lend to a fellow Jew and extract interest from them. So interestingly, the Rivan indicates that it's not really laudable to avoid taking ribis from a non-Jew, but it's just a way to get me used to not lending on ribis, lest I come to extract interest from a fellow Jew. You know what this reminds me of? It's like the discussion of Tsar Bali Chaim, why we're not supposed to gratuitously harm animals. Is it because there's an intrinsic, I'm not comparing non-Jews to animals, but just for the sake of a legal analogy, the reason that I'm not supposed to harm animals, one might say, is just intrinsically there's a value to respecting animals. They deserve our care, our respect. That would be one way to conceptualize it. But you look in the Ramban has a classic passage where he explains Shiluach HaKein, of why we send away the mother bird. And he said, look, let's be honest. If we really didn't want to cause any harm to animals, we would be vegans or vegetarians at least. We wouldn't be shechting. We wouldn't have karbanos. We wouldn't have offerings in the Beis HaMikdash. Rather, why do we have these acts of kindness toward the animals? It's lahargil. It's to make me accustomed to treating human beings with dignity, with respect, and with sympathy. If I can bring myself to do it for an animal, in Kal v'chomer, I'll get used to doing it for others. But it's just a hechsher mitzvah. It's a means to an end. It's a facilitate. It's facilitating something. It's not a value to itself. So this is a much broader Jewish thought discussion to have. It would seem that the classic sources, for the most part, see it as instrumental, though I'm sure there are some that say that there's an intrinsic value as well. Okay. Let me just pause. Anything I can clarify at this point? Okay. Now, remember, it said at the end of the pasuk, Siv, Osa Ila Lo Yimo. Anyone who does all these things, they will never falter. Lo Yimo Lo Olam. Kishahaya Rabbi Gamliel Magila Mikra Zeh Haya Botem, Rabbi Gamliel reached this pasuk. He began to cry. Amar Magda Avilu Kula Lo Yimo, Achal Binayu Yimo. It's the implication of the pasuk is, only he who observes all of these principles will never falter. But the implication is, if I only keep to one of these principles, then I will falter. Amrule, don't worry, he was consoled by others. Miksiv osa koila? Osa eleksiv. Does it say he who does all of these principles? No, it says osa eila. Afila bechada minayu. Even if you just keep to one of these 11 principles, you're already in God's good graces. You will not falter. Dilote mahavi, because if you don't explain the verse this way, ksiv krach rina, there's another verse which would be very difficult to understand, where it says, alti tam b'chol eila, do not make yourself, do not defile yourself through all of these. Let's see, dalet, alti tam b'chol eila, ki b'chol eila nitmu ha'goyim ha'sharni m'shaleach b'nechem in v'yikra. So hasam nami hanogia b'chol eila hu b'metame, b'chad minai lo, Allah ba'aches b'chol eila, ha'konami ba'aches b'chol eila. So what, you're telling me all the things the Torah listed not to become tummy to? I have to first become tummy to all of that? I have to interact and have all of them to become tummy? No, what it means is if you have one of these items, then you become tummy, then you've defiled yourself. It doesn't mean everything you have to do. So similarly over here, you don't have to keep all 11 principles. It'd be nice, but even just keep one of them, the promise of that pasuk will come to fruition and you will not falter. Good. That was David HaMelech. In the era of David HaMelech, he emphasized 11 principles. But as generations went on, Ba Yishayahu V'Midan Al-Shesh, we are two line, we're in the second to last small line. Ba Yishayahu V'Midan Al-Shesh, Yishayahu cut it almost in half, down to six principles. Where does he state these six principles? The Siv, Holech Tzedakos, the Dover Meisharim. So, okay, one who walks in Tzedakos, Tzedakos righteousness, the Dover Meisharim, who speaks proper, upright words. Moes Bebetza Mashakos, who also despises Oshek is like extortion. So making profit from extortion. Noor Kapov mitmoch b'shochad, and he shakes off his palms, his hands, from holding shochad, bribery. Otim Ozno mishmoa damim, who seals his ears from listening to blood. V'otim enav mira'os farah, and closes his eyes from seeing evil. Now, what are all these things mean? We'll break it down again. Number one, Holech Tzedakos, the one who walks in righteousness, Zeh Avraham Avinu. This refers to Avraham Avinu. We're a big fan of Avraham Avinu, apparently. The Siv, Ki Adati Laman Asher Yitzaveh. This is a continuation of the pasuk on the side. So God says the word yada here means like yadia, like a relationship. So God was yodea. God loved Abraham because Abraham instructed his household in the ways of God. So that's what it means, holy tzedakos, that they should walk in the ways of God. And he instructed others, his household as well. Number two, the Dover Meisharim. What is Dover Meisharim? except for being the name of a sefer. So Dor Meisharim Zeshe Eino Machnit Pnei Chaver Barad. This is the first someone who doesn't embarrass his fellow individual in public. Mois Vesem Hashakos. What does it mean? Someone who despises making money from Osheka of an extortionary nature. Gagon Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha. Well, I believe we had him earlier, right? Where was Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha? Right? He was in our list earlier, if I'm not mistaken. Somebody wanna, where was it?
Earlier to that.
I think we had Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha earlier, didn't we? Oh, you know what? No, never mind. I'm mixing him up with another name. Gagon Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha. So what is the instance over there? So Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha, this is the story. It's Dibar Maskel, but Betza Mashakos in the Rebbe. Shalom Ratzel Lito La'atzel Rishis Hagesh, Shehedi Lo Adam Echad, Shabal Ladun Lefanab, Abba Gavdahawa Tvoin, Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha, Yishum Dedami Ki'ilo Oshko L'Kohen Sher Ragel Zaliti Lo Matnosa. So basically, there was someone who was trying to ingratiate himself with Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha, who was a Kohen, and instead of giving to the usual Kohen the gifts, he wanted to give his gifts to Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha instead. Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha turned it down because he said, well, it's not right. This Kohen is relying on you to survive. You're always providing him with truma, you're providing him with the reish segez, so you can't just give it to me. This guy has been expecting to get it from you. So that spoke to the integrity of Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha. That's number three. Number four. Noer kapav mitzmoch b'shochad. So he shakes off his palms from holding bribes. Kagon Rabbi Shmuel bar Rav Yossi. Okay, Rabbi Shmuel bar Rav Yossi, he's the one that we had before. Rabbi Shmuel bar Rav Yossi, just looking back up. Also, when we talk about shochad, b'shochad anaki l'loka, kagon Rabbi Shmuel bar Rav Yossi. He was the one who didn't want to take an early deposit, however you want to put it, from his sharecropper. Otim Azno Mishmo Adam, number five, someone who seals his ears from hearing about blood. Deloshama Bizilusin Surabana Vishasik, because someone who doesn't listen to ill that is spoken about a Torah scholar and remains silent. You go to Rabbi Lezer Rabbi Shimon, like Rabbi Lezer Rabbi Shimon, who normally would stand up. One time he failed to stand up for the dignity of a Talmud Chacham, and he was punished on that account. Finally, Va'otzim Eim Eros Barah, someone who doesn't look at evil, at bad stuff. Kedar Rabbi Chia Bar Abba, the Rabbi Bar Abba, Zeshin Amistak Banashim Shasha Omos Agvisa. So, a man, he has a choice to walk somewhere where there's no issues, or if he walks on a path where the women are in the river and that they are bathing and it's inappropriate to look. So someone who avoids going down a path where there's possible pritzas, even though he could avert his eyes, he could look away. Someone who makes sure to avert paths where there's terrible things that they ought not to be looking at, that also is praiseworthy. And Uksiv, and it's written, Umeromim Yishkon, all these people, they will dwell on high with God. Those were the six principles of Yeshayahu. So we start with 11, we whittle it down to six. How low can you go? Ba Micha Damidan al Shalosh. Came along to Micha, and he whittled it down in half. He chopped it down to three. Dechsev, higi lecha Adam, ma tov, u'ma Hashem dorish mimcha. What does God want from you? Ki ma'asos mishpat, but to do justice, v'havas chesed, and to love kindness, v'hatznei aleches im Hashem alekecha, and to walk humbly with the Lord your God. So three principles here. Number one, Asos Mishpat, Zeh Hadin. This refers to rendering proper judgment. Number two, Ahavas Chesed, self-explanatory. Zeh Gemilas Chasadim. This refers to doing acts of loving kindness. Batznei Aleches, and walking with snias, with humbleness before God. This refers to one who provides for a funeral or for a wedding, that it should be done in a discreet fashion. So these are things that are not necessarily always done in private. Nonetheless, the Torah told us that these acts of chesed should be done in private. Kal v'chomer, giving money to someone who might be in dire straits, or someone who needs help making ends meet. Kal v'chomer, those are things that should also be done in a discreet fashion, in order to, in case the person feels that it's undignified, that way you don't compromise that. Good. Now we're down to three. How much lower can we get already? Chazer Yishayahu Abidin Ashtayim, Yishayahu went down to two principles. Excuse me. Shenemar, Ko Amar Hashem, Shimru Mishpat Va'asu Tzedakah, do justice and do tzedakah, do righteousness. Va'amos Amidin Alachas. And then came Amos, and he went even lower. Just one thing. What's that one thing? Shneamar, Ko Amar Hashem, the Beit Yisrael, Dershuni V'chayil. Very simple. Search me out, and you will live. And live. Maskevla Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchak, Ema Dershuni V'chol Torah Kula. Maybe this refers to keeping all 613 mitzvahs in the Torah. It's not just one thing. You know, Shkoyah. Keep the Torah, one mitzvah. Keep the Torah, that's 613 mitzvahs, plus mitzvahs and derabanan on top of that. Rather, this one principle, that tzaddik in his faithfulness, he shall live. So being generally faithful, whatever that means, faithful to God, that is how a person will live, and that's the one principle that he stressed. So amazing. We start with 613 mitzvos. That was too much for us to focus on. We whittle it down to 11, to 6, to 3, 2, and 1. I don't know what we're up to today. Like, we're in the negatives at this point, probably, right? I don't know what number we're up to these days. No, it's important, by the way, because sometimes, I mean, this is like, you know, you look in the Kirov literature, but it's not just from Kirov, it could be for anyone. You grew up observant, have yeshiva day school education. But the important thing is that if someone tries to improve in all areas of observance, of halacha, or of learning, whatever it might be, in any area of Judaism, if you try to do everything well, then you're not going to do anything well. Now, it doesn't mean not to keep mitzvos that I have a hard time with. What it means is that maybe in addition to the baseline that I'm supposed to do for each and every mitzvah I'm obligated in, I should find certain mitzvos or midos that I can emphasize and I can specialize in. And so I think that's what the different leaders of the generation were doing. They were asking themselves, what kind of principles could we emphasize? Apparently, emphasizing integrity was very important. You see, ribbis, shochad, speaking the truth, not seeing ill of others, not embarrassing us. So integrity is a very important idea that was recurring through this list. Great. Any questions? Okay. Moving forward. That is the end of that section of the Gemara. That brought us pretty far down. We have one other section, and then we'll start the famous stories at the end of Makos, where Rabbi Akiva laughs at the destruction of the temple. Rav Yossi Bar Chanina, Arba Gezeiros Goser Moshe Rabbeinu Al Yisrael, Bo Arba Nevim Ubitzim. This is very fascinating theologically. We're going to now see four statements, seemingly four almost curses that Moshe Rabbeinu gave, and then a later prophet came, and I don't know what this even means. He overruled Moshe Rabbeinu. You'll see why this is very confusing. Moshe Amar, so here are the four examples. Moshe Amar, Vayishkon Yisrael Betach, Badad Ein Yaakov. that the Jewish people, they'll secure, they'll dwell securely and on their own when they have, not Ayin, but Ayin, like Ka'im, when they have those who are like Yaakov among them. Now, that's a very high standard. I don't know how many of us can say we are like Yaakov Avinu. Maybe you guys, but let's be honest. The average person is not Yaakov Avinu.
But I don't want to be like Yaakov.
I'm sorry?
I don't want to be like Yaakov. I want to be like Rachel.
Okay, so there you have it. I didn't say Cain Rachel. It's like Cain Yaakov. So that's very difficult, right? If everyone's like Phyllis and just wants to aspire to be like Rachel, how are the Jewish people going to survive? So Ba'amos came along Amos and he overruled it. Shenemar, as it's stated, Chadal na mi Yakum Yaakov. Please God, just relent at this point, refrain. You know, how are we going to have someone arise who will be like Yaakov? And it's written subsequently that God accepted his plea. Number two. Moshe Amar, that when you are amongst these nations, you will have no tranquility, you'll have no rest for the weary. God, please provide tranquility for the Jewish people.
Where was from the previous one, where was that one? Where did God accede to the request? Where did that happen?
So it is, you the precise pasuk, was Muhammad. It's in Amos, in Sefer Amos. So, and it's Perik Zion, Pasuk He Thuva. So it's the next Pasuk. The next Pasuk begins, Nicham Hashem Al Zos.
Oh, I see. So he agrees right there, right on the spot. Okay.
Yeah, right there on the spot. It's literally the next Pasuk. Now you have to, the creative part over here is that there's no indication that Amos is addressing that statement by Moshe Rabbeinu. It's Chazal who come along and say, Moshe's reference to Yaakov and Amos reference to Yaakov are no coincidence. Amos is responding to what Moshe Rabbeinu stated in the Torah. But yes, these two are sitting right next to each other. Good. Number three. This is an important one over here. And this, I have to say, I have to look into more because out of all the things mentioned here theologically, this one really requires further analysis. Moshe Amar, Hokein Avos Abanim, the Ba'yecheskel Bitla HaNevesh Achutas Yisomus. Moshe Rabbeinu says in the Torah, a well-known line, that children will die on the account of their fathers. They will die due to their ancestors' sins. Ba'yecheskel Bitla came along Yecheskel and said, no, HaNevesh Achutas Yisomus, only you're only responsible for yourself. What your ancestors did has no impact upon you. This is very difficult to understand. I mean, well, number one, you have to ask the question about almost like a vicarious punishment. And then number two, once you could justify that, if it was justified enough in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, how can your Yirmiyahu come along and say it's no longer theologically reasonable? And then he had the power to change God's mind and say, yeah, by the way, God, vicarious punishment, not a great idea. Let's, what does that even mean? So requires further analysis, but that this is like a very important line. Number four, Moshe Amar Vavanatem Bagoyim, that you will become utterly lost amongst the nations. Ba'i Yishayah Amar, but Yishayah even said, that there will be this great ingathering one day, and you will not become completely lost among the nations when you are in exile. Related to this, Amara, Mistafina Mehaik. You know the word Mistafina? It's a good word to know. Because in halakhic literature, especially in later halakhic literature, you'll see statements where an achron, you see many times, is afraid to disagree with a Rishon, someone who came earlier. But he thinks, I think that my idea is so compelling that I'm going to disagree anyway. So you have to do so, though, with much humility and trepidation. So a common phrase you see is, Lula de Mistafina. If, you know, I'm very afraid, I don't want to disagree, I'm very reluctant, But nonetheless, I disagree. So just a good word to know. So I was very afraid. I was very concerned when I read the verse of and you'd be lost among the nations. It sounds like while we're in exile, the Jewish people will be completely lost. Maybe, you know, the word avad is the root for avida, hashavas avida, lost object. So maybe what to me will become lost? Will become lost, but like an object that's being sought after, that God will still seek us out to return us back. Very nice idea. Rather, what was he concerned about? Well, when you look at the end of the verse, it says, and you will be eaten up by the lands of your enemies. So it sounds like we're going to be swallowed up and the Jewish people will be lost forever. Maybe this is akin to like when someone picks off cucumbers and gourds. Apparently, when you pick those off, you don't take everything off the tree. I'm not really sure why. Just a lack of agricultural knowledge on my part. But essentially, you'll eat some. What's it mean? Will be eaten, will be consumed when we're in exile. Part of us will be consumed, not everybody. So there's a very cheery thought. Don't worry, you know, most of you, a lot of you guys will perish when you're in exile, but a few of you guys will survive. Don't worry about it. That's a very cheery thought, right? Finally, we come to the final story. And here's what we all do. Just to be Yotzei Zion, I mean, we need to finish the Amud. Our policy is we do an Amud, right? We try to do an Amud when we meet. So we'll do the first part of the story up until through the second line on the next Amud. And then next week, we'll have a very short session. I might even just do it Zoom only at that point because it'll be so short. It'll be like probably 15 minutes. I'll prepare some additional things on top of it just to share some more Torah. And then we have our Siyum on December 12th, which I'm very excited about. And again, please sign up if you haven't done so yet. It's a great opportunity. Okay. So here we go. So after destruction of the Second Temple, these four rabbinic scholars, they were going on a spazier. They were taking a walk together. And they heard all of these different, they heard the masses speaking, making noise from the middle of the town plaza. All the way 120 mil away. A mil takes about 18 minutes to walk. So 120 times 18, I can't do math on the spot, but if anyone can, that's a lot of minutes, right? Very, very far away. That's the way. It's very far away. V'shilu bochin Rabbi Akiva Masachi. And what happened was everyone began to cry, except Rabbi Akiva, who made light of it. He was laughing. Amarlo, Ibnei Matam Asachi, why are you so happy? Why are you so joyful at this moment? Amarlahem, Batem Ibnei Matam Bokem, why are you guys crying? Amarlo, Goyim Halosh, Mishtachim Matsum, Mekachim Le'elim, these Goyim, these pagans who are worshiping these idols that have no power, Yoshim Betach Vahashki, They are dwelling in peace and tranquility. Everything is going well for them in life. Meanwhile, the Anu, Beis Hadom Ragle Elokeinu, Sora Ba'esh, hello, Nivka? Meanwhile, our temple, it has been burnt to crisps. It's been incinerated. And these people are able to celebrate. And we, look at us. How can we not cry? Omer Lahen. He responds, "Lokachani mitzageg." This is precisely why I'm laughing. Umalo ovri ritzono. If this is how God provides for those who transgress His will, look at what they get. Kach lo'osi ritzono al achas kama v'kama. Then imagine the great reward that God has waiting for those who fulfill God's will. And so if they can receive this much reward in this world, imagine what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has in store for us, whether it be during Mashiach or in the world to come. And that brings us to the end of our shiur for today. That's actually a very common theme in rabbinic literature. We saw it in the Mishnah, actually, previously. There's all sorts of stories like this, where you have Bali Tshuva. I'm thinking of, like, sort of Yossi Ben Yoezer. It's one of my favorite stories that I save, like, pre-Ne'ila or on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur at some point, where I try to get everyone to do, you know, like, the last pitch for Tshuva. A story about how Yossi Ben Yoezer, he was tied up. And the Romans were about to, Romans, they were about to kill him, and he's being brought out, dragged by a horse. Meanwhile, his nephew, who left the Jewish faith and joined the invaders, so he comes over like, see, you follow the will of God, and look what happened to you. He responds to his nephew and says, this is what God does to those who keep his will. Imagine what God does to those who transgress his will. And immediately upon hearing that, his nephew, according to the account, he performed all arba mitzvos based on himself, all four forms of death penalties. By the way, mitzvahs-wise, I have no idea how you do all arba mitzvos based on at once on yourself. Somehow he did it. And his neshama, because of that one act of tshuva, his neshama actually reached heaven before Rav Yossi ben Yoezer. So it tells you about the power of one moment of tshuva and also about the reward that God has in store for those who perform his will faithfully. Tzadik b'emunaso yichya. All right. Any questions? I mean, I imagine not so many. It's an agada to Gemara, not halacha, but yeah, you still have good questions on agada, on agada. Okay, Yashir Koach, everyone. Again, God willing, next week, same time, 7 o'clock. I'll try to prepare some supplementary material because it's a shorter Gemara, but I'm not going to purposely drag it out for a whole hour. Don't worry. And please, if you have any questions about the Siyum, please let me know. I'm very excited to celebrate together. I'm thinking of maybe even just starting the Mishnah Megillah. I'll rehash it when we get together. I'm thinking maybe even just it's a nice thing at a Siyum, and when you finish Masechta, you say you learn the first little bit of the next Masechta, you make a Haskalah, you jump right in. So just to give you a heads up, if you can't make it, I'll rehash, but I would really love for all of you guys to be there if you're able to.
Okay. You're not finishing next week, or are you going to finish at the Siyum, right?
So we're going to finish it. Now, the way it works halachically is
that you do the Baruch
Hu, you have to make the Siyum. So what I'm basically going to do is I'm going to save a Perush on the Gemara. I'm not going to fully explain everything. I mean, I'll explain it basic shot, but I'm going to share a further elucidation of the Gemara at the Siyum, and I'll have to figure out how to tie that into a message somehow. Not my first rush. I'm sure I'll figure it out. So that way we could have the seam at its appropriate time. Okay. Yashar Koach, a Freilich in Chanukah, and I'm so, God willing, so excited to be finishing the Sechta together. All right.
Thank you.
Okay, have a good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good Shabbos.